Rana here, reminding everyone that Naomi Ekperigin's fabulous special for Netflix is coming out December 29th. So mark your calendars, put it in iCal, put a reminder, do what you need to do. Friend of the show, an occasional frenemy of Brian. That's December 29th. The special is called The Stand-Ups. And Naomi does a fabulous half-hour set. Of course she does. What else would she do? Set your reminders now, and we'll be reminding you. Pardon me. So proud of her. Kiss, kiss.
Brian.
Darling.
It's our 100th episode.
100 of these. And 100 free feed episodes.
And we are celebrating with an American icon tonight.
By the way, this is like top of the heap guests this week. Truly. This is an icon.
I mean, this is, it's a big get, I hate to tell you.
And by the way, not only is it a big get, it is like the highest of highbrow gets.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is, you know, this guy's got other things to do.
I don't even know who to compare it to.
Yeah.
We're dealing with someone who is partially responsible for the most critically acclaimed television shows in history, basically, or at least of the last few years.
Correct.
Not to mention someone whose pen people have lived and died by for many years.
Absolutely, no question. Not to mention dear friend of one Steve Sondheim. May he rest in peace.
I mean, let's put it this way. Stephen Sondheim had a lot of respect for this guy.
Well put.
Yeah.
Well put.
That's who we're dealing
with. But before we get to Fabulous Frank Rich.
Fabulous.
Which I can't stand it. I'm so excited.
I can't even believe it.
We need to talk about the fact that it's our 100th episode, pardon
100, me. Rana. 100.
And we have to just get through some of these comments, and we have a couple of pretty great follow-ups as well.
Do you want to hear a joke? Do you want to hear a funny joke?
Yes.
Okay. Boy, it's episode 100, and it would have been fun to do a 420.
Yes. Okay.
It's like a number joke? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right. That was some of your quick math.
Yeah.
Something happened the other day on the show, which I can't remember. And I thought to myself, I can't believe I didn't ask Brian to do the quick math on that.
Quick math, baby.
I can't remember what it was. There was some sort of quick math you were supposed to do that you didn't do for us.
Soft math.
Now, the holidays are right here, Brian.
Oh, my God. They're right around the corner.
I can't believe, I'm worried you're going to go to Italy and then they're going to put the Omicron embargo. You're not going to be able
to get
back.
There's a chance I don't come back. I mean, there is actually, and not by my own doing, I don't know. What is it? Well, you can always come back to America if you're an American citizen.
I hope so.
I don't know what the ban or the, I don't know. All I know is I hope I get there. And then once I'm there, I will figure it all out. But Rana, you're just going to have to keep your phone on. No silent.
Don't worry. I've got the embassy on speed dial, but okay, I am
at
very
all hours,
jealous
that phone has to
because
be on.
I've been saying, where's the first place I want to go? The first you've said to me over and over, where's the first place you want to go after the,
and you've said
it's over. And I said, Italy.
You didn't say Italy. You said Italy.
I said I wanted to be Italy in the 70s. And I want to know if it's crowded or not crowded. I want to hear every inch of it. I can't wait.
You'll hear it all, Rana.
In the meantime.
Wish you were coming.
LH37492716 48. I think this person put their credit card number or something in by accident.
They may have.
That's more like a driver's license number. 10 out of 10. Rana is my Jackie O, my Princess Di. Huh.
Rana doesn't like Princess Di comparisons for sure, because she doesn't think she was an interesting person. Isn't that right? I plead
the fifth.
Fair enough.
I just think, I think she was a fascination, but I think, and I'm a fan. And I
but you think if you sat
next
to her,
a lot of wonderful things for
she did.
She was incredible during AIDS.
Absolutely.
And really
walking
really
through those landmines.
Brave and incredible in many ways. But I
put China cabinets back on the map.
Yes, I don't think she was a great conversationalist, probably.
You have said before that if you were sitting next to her at a dinner party, she might be a little less interesting than people might think.
Correct.
Yeah.
I trust her taste and advice implicitly. I never laugh harder than when Brian with a capital Y tells a story. Thank you for all that you do with a smiley face.
Well, all I can tell you is if you are not in the carriage house, you better get there. Because if you like my stories, I've got a story that starts with pigs and ends with
well, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the and it descends into madness.
It descends into
domesticated
madness.
Pigs living in a house.
It's a true story. It's a true
and it
story.
It also involves true love.
You're right.
Whoops. I thought it was. Yeah.
You're right.
You know, I have to say I'm a little insulted. I wanted to hit 3,000 in the carriage house before the end of the year on Patreon, and I'm only at about 2,960 or something.
Well, it's not the end of the year yet, folks.
So
where are your subscriptions for your friends or for
yourself? If there are 40 people out there that were thinking about joining the carriage house, now's the time. If you want to make an old woman happy, now's the time.
That's I can't go to Rome happily until this is done.
Yeah.
Okay.
IGF12 says five stars only. Superb podcast. Excellent advice from an elegant older woman and a character from the Looney Tunes. Get out of here.
Get out of here.
Now, I don't know what this means. Somebody.
Oh, I know exactly what it
what
means.
What does it mean?
Well, there's an emoji of a baby and there's an emoji of a pineapple. That's the two of us, Rana. That's Rana Baby and Pineapple Fruity Brian.
That is who that is. Yeah. Oh, that is so funny. That's Rana Baby and Pineapple Fruit.
That's right.
It equals five stars.
Five stars only. Again, Rana has mentioned it before, but all you have to do is click on five stars. And if you've done it before, you can do it every single time you open
every
that
app. Do it every minute of every time
every
you're on the
minute
toilet.
Of every day.
Every time you're on the toilet. Hit five stars.
Exactly. All right, Rana, we got some great feedback this week. Would you
now,
like
these are people from the carriage house that are commenting on the free feed? What is this?
I think it might be, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I can't believe that this is from someone named A. Okay. I can't believe that my first contribution to the carriage house is going to be something so very not Shades of Vanilla. Hmm. Okay, I think I know where this is going. Mm-hmm. But I was re-listening to the episode with the loud sneezer and remembered something chilling that I had to share. Huh? By the way, I love the idea that this person had blocked it until this episode.
Yeah, I do love a repressed memory.
Me too. Yeah. A few years ago, I was back in my hometown and out Christmas shopping. I was in my car, stopped at a red light at a large intersection, four lanes of traffic on either side.
Okay.
One car back, so there was one car stopped ahead of me. I was leaning forward, futzing with my phone to get it to navigate to my next destination, when I felt a sneeze coming. Now, I am not a graceful sneezer. I am an emphatic, full-body sneezer. Mm. I have been told I sneeze like a trucker. I'm not sure that truckers sneeze in one particular way, but that was clearly meant for contrast. I'm a smallish female academic in my late 20s at the time of this comment. Oh, at the time of that comment.
I see. They are saying you were brusque.
Right. So I'm in my car and the sneeze is coming fast and I sneeze. My head flies forward and honks my horn. And here's the harrowing part. Oh, my God. The car in front of me hears the honk and drives through the intersection.
What?
Through the red light. My sneeze could have killed multiple people. Honestly, if they had gotten in an accident, you would have lived with that the rest of your life. Thankfully, no one was hurt, and I'm ashamed to report that the experience did not reform me into a tiny, tiny sneezer from there on out. I still sneeze like a menace, but I'm very careful to keep my head far away from my car when I do. Wow!
Outrageous.
You hit your head on the car horn?
Also, enough. Do your giant sneezing at home, okay?
Right. Maybe at the car, roll down your window and
you don't
sneeze
have to have
it out
an
the window.
Orgasm every time you sneeze, okay?
Well, as you and Michaela said, that's probably what a lot of these loud sneezers are into.
Okay, but let them have it at home.
I agree with you, Rana.
Yeah.
Kathy D. Okay.
Now this was something that came up. People were saying this.
I'm still thinking about the copycat wedding dress drama from this free feed.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly suspect the mother-in-law suggested that dress to the ex-girlfriend.
What do you think about that?
That is a wrinkle in this story. I did not even consider it. What do you think of it?
Well, I don't think that's the case, but maybe it is. I think it's exciting that it's a possibility.
It is an exciting possibility. Yeah. That's amazing, Kathy. Great suggestion.
Yeah.
Juliet said, sorry if this isn't the right place to do it, but to the
Because she's on pay. I have to say, this is a wonderful example of the kind of conversation and comments that are happening on the Patreon, because
they're firing on all cylinders over there.
Other than the Instagram, it's the only place where you can be in dialogue with other CHIPs.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's pretty fabulous.
And because really that's how you get to an amazing assessment like that, is by building off of what people have already put down.
Exactly.
Juliet says, sorry if this isn't the right place to do it, but to the free feed question about when to get another dog, to me, they sounded like they still needed to heal more. I lost my dog a couple years ago to cancer. I'm sorry. And the rapid decline is so heartbreaking to watch your friend go through. But here's some things that were nice about having a pet-free life for a bit, for me. Dog sitting for friends, temporary short-term fostering or dog's day out with kennel dogs, volunteer walking dogs for a kennel. You can travel more freely. We brought our dog's ashes to a special hike in Colorado, and it felt really nice to celebrate him that way. You'll know when the right dog will come along. Heart emoji. It's very sweet.
I think it's very good advice. I don't think that this advice applies to the person that wrote it.
How come?
Because the person that wrote in was not just a dog lover. They were a person that had a vacuum in their life.
Right.
And they wanted something to love and funnel all their attention into that lived in their home, that they had to get home to take that dog out, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm wrong about that. Maybe I'm wrong that this isn't good advice, because it's true that that person could say, well, now I volunteer for a rescue organization.
Sure.
Because I had a dog and I lost my dog. And now I do this volunteering because dogs mean so much to me. But so that's all very nice. These are nice ideas.
Sure. Well, someone else wrote in about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dear Ron and Brian, I'm writing for two reasons. The first, to share with a letter writer who just lost their dog the same advice I gave my teenage daughter a few years ago when she suddenly lost her cat. I told her there is no wrong or right amount of time to wait to get another pet, that the pet you lost understands the depth of your love. Oh my gosh, it's so sweet. And would want that love given to another animal.
That is sweet.
That's really nice. Second, I have experienced firsthand the high quality of Connor McKee's customer service.
There you go.
I accidentally had my 2-pack of Negronis mailed to my second home.
Excuse me.
Mailed to my second home, and he's been working diligently with FedEx to make sure it gets delivered to my primary home. By the way, I can't even believe you're bothering Connor with that. That's your fault. But that's okay.
True, but he's happy to sort it out.
He's happy to do it. He is quick to respond and always with a kind and cheerful demeanor. Kiss, kiss, Liz B. in Boston. Love you, Liz. P.S. Oh, this feels good. Mm-hmm. This is serving.
This is a win.
This is a personal win.
Yeah, it is.
My husband loves the Huckberry cocktail shaker I gave him for Hanukkah. Rana, I'll never forget being brutalized and slapped across the face with a brick when you said you weren't sure you liked the cocktail shaker. I'll never forget being punched in the gut. The way you attacked me that day, I'll never forget it.
Well, I also want to say that she said for Hanukkah, not Ronica, so she doesn't even count.
You're right. Liz, you're a very complicated person.
Cynthia Dupree Sweeney was going to get the Huckberry. I haven't heard from her yet. And I also happen to know, in case her sons are listening, that she bought absolutely everything for her sons for Christmas off of your Ronica list.
Honestly, Cynthia is truly the best.
So that's a compliment. She's got impeccable taste.
It is, Rana.
Now, wait a minute. Somebody else wrote in about the wedding dress.
Yes, they did. Dear Ron and Brian, to begin with, I was so beyond excited to hear the recommendation I sent in mentioned during Ronica. I recommended the wine remover spray.
Oh, that's very cute.
That was a fabulous,
very
suggestion.
Cute stocking stuffer. Yeah.
Totally. That was the highlight of my month. I told all my friends who listen, because I forced them to subscribe. And now, of course, they're obsessed with the podcast.
Well, don't just have them subscribe. Have them do five stars only.
Rate and review. Just rate. And they were very impressed. I have advice for the woman who wrote in about the dress that her partner's ex also wore. My friend and I actually bought the same wedding dress without meaning to when we got married. Ah. Without meaning to. Our weddings were 3 months apart. I can say absolutely no one noticed. We just dressed them up differently. She did classic simple jewelry with a white rose bouquet, and I wore a satin peach belt with a bunch of tropical flowers in my hair, bouquet, and also a lei. We got married in Hawaii. I think she just mixes up the detail and makes them different enough no one will notice it's the same dress. I hope that helps. Lots of love, Elena.
I think Elena's right. Accessorize.
That's right.
Make it your own.
Just keep putting jewelry on as much as you can.
Forget what Coco Chanel said. She said, take one thing off. We say to put one thing on.
One thing on. Honestly, walk down the aisle with a pair.
Certainly Elena did that. She looks like Carmen Miranda from her description. So true.
She's got all kinds of flowers and fruits and all of it. She's ready to go. But yeah.
And all she needs is a bird on her shoulder.
That's what I was going to say. Walk with a parrot on your shoulder down the aisle because then no one will notice you.
So listen to me. I know we have to get to our fabulous guest, but I have to tell people, have been writing in rave reviews about Vienna and Winter. We already knew they loved the Ronca.
It's the most, I'm going to be honest with you. I can't say it's the most delicious because I have a different feeling for one or the other every day.
But they're also, I mean, I would say shades of vanilla. Honestly, it does change every day because I think I do love passionately carrot chops, shades of vanilla in Vienna and Winter equally passionately. And that my mood strikes me different on it every different day. But the people, if you're a cinnamon person, the cinnamon people are going crazy for Vienna in Winter. And I just want to remind people that when it's gone, it's gone. It's only here to the end of the month. Same for the Ronica blend.
I mean, I'm literally going to go buy more bags right now because I forgot you can't subscribe to it.
AskRonicaCoffee.com. The Negronas, and as Liz B said from Boston, that Connor has the most impeccable taste and customer service. And you can go to Negrana.com or you can go to Fiasco Brooklyn and you can buy straight from him if you want to have him pick something out for you, et cetera, et cetera.
I ordered the old fashioned set for myself. How about that?
Fabulous. As well you should have. The year you've had.
Thank you.
Come on.
Thank you.
Incredible.
Thank you.
That you is still either the number one or number two show on Netflix. I hate to tell you.
Look, don't tell what's her face. Cause she didn't. What was her name? The lady from Fox News, Laura Ingraham. She can't understand it for the life of her.
Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Laura Ingraham, the asshole from Fox News.
So we're about to talk to Frank Rich, and I don't want to bring this up because the cast is so incredible. I don't want to play favorites, so I don't want to sort of play favorites with him.
Shiv.
But Justin Kirk, who was a friend of this show,
was
so incredible on Succession this season. Looks so. I know you're a little behind, so maybe you haven't seen
it. I am
a
little behind, but I will say Justin Kirk is a phenomenal actor with phenomenal presence who I will watch in anything.
What an actor, and he's terrific in everything, but he is so out of the pack fantastic on Succession.
He is fantastic.
He looks incredible.
Which is so good because handsome. I have to tell you, I will never forget that time he underdressed for the cameo he made.
Well, then you're going to laugh when you see him on Succession.
No, he's so handsome and he always looks great.
And I hope he's going to win. Yes, I hope he's going to win. Are we going to do Lonely Hats in the Carriage House again this
Well, I hope so, only to see Valentine's what Justin Kirk stuff. Wears. For no other reason, just for that.
Just to see if he wears an old bootcut jean and a t-shirt or something. Maybe he got to keep the suit from Succession. He's incredible.
Maybe.
But everyone is so phenomenal. Good on that show. But I had to give a little shout out because he's a Carriage House sweetheart, of course.
Yes.
But I'm not going to pressure Frank into making sure that his storyline's even bigger for next year. I can feel that it's the storm clouds gathering.
Well, and we got confirmation that Frank listens to this show. So there you go, Frank.
There you go. And we should say a shout out to Frank's son's mother-in-law, whose name I do not know, but I know that she's a listener.
You're about to understand. Did we talk about her on the show? I can't remember now. We do. Or was that in our pre-conversation.
I don't remember. It might have been in our preamble.
But all we have to tell you is that the right Park Avenue woman is listening to this show.
The right people continue to listen to the show. The people that know. The discerning people.
The culture, movers and shakers in New York are listening.
You know, you laugh, but how many times does it happen?
It's not a joke.
Something newsy that gets broken on this show, we talk about it, and I'm not kidding, a month later, 6 weeks later, it hits the zeitgeist, and no one knows that it started here, whatever it was, or that we called it.
So you need to start telling your friends that we called it, everybody.
Yeah, so people, you know, would it kill people to tell people to listen to the show?
Yeah, come on.
What are you waiting for?
Honest to God.
All right, I'm done begging and pandering.
All right, Marlene. Sorry, I just saw the M, and so it made me.
You know why I have that up is because my sister's coming up.
She's coming. I told you. You did tell me she was coming.
That was somebody asked the question about what do you do with a gift you don't like on Jason Butler-Hanna.
Correct.
And I can't believe I forgot to say, you do what I do.
Put it out when they come over.
They're coming over. Exactly. Yep. All right, dear. I absolutely adore you.
I love you, Rona.
I can't wait to hear every minute of every detail of your trip. But in the meantime, let's get to our fabulous, fabulous guest.
I can't wait.
Mr. Frank Gritsch.
Happy 100, Rona.
Happy 100, Brian.
Thank you.
Attention Carriage House members, Rona here to tell you all about Anchor.fm. Anchor is the fabulous app that we use to create our podcast. And let me tell you something. You can use it to create a podcast of your own. It's totally free. They have these terrific creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, if you're that sort of person. I have a staff, excuse me. And now you can even add any song from Spotify directly to your episodes, which is pretty fabulous. The possibilities are totally endless. So download the free Anchor app now or go to anchor.fm to get started today. Kiss, kiss. Brian.
Rona, this is as fancy as this show has ever been. And I know he won't call himself fancy, but I'm telling you, outside looking in, he is baccarat to me.
Well, I personally I'm a little offended by that because I'm on the show every week. So,
well, that's true, Rona, but I get used to you. To me now, you're Waterford, and he's a baccarat. I just have to be honest. Well, I just have to be honest, Rona, because I'm used to you. I use you in my daily life, and for him, I pass a window, and I think one day, you know what I mean?
Well, that's you don't know, Frank. You don't know the real Frank. That's what I'm going to say.
And you do, Rona?
No question. Okay.
How do you know Frank, Rona?
Look, I've told people before, I have a New York circle, okay?
Oh God, Don't talk about her.
We're just going to say that, let's just say Frank and Alex have floated in and out of that circle. Okay? That's what we're going to say.
You're talking about Elaine?
No, Alex. Talking about his wife.
No, I know, but are you talking about the circle being Elaine?
Of course.
She's so rude to me. So
well,
dismissive.
You and Frank can get into that together. We have today, a total American icon.
Truly, though.
It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough that he is one of the most influential journalists of the last, 50 years, I'm going to say.
That's sort of insulting
to Frank. It makes him sound old.
Well, I would even call him a culture shaper in many ways.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So then he goes, he does that. That's fine. Now he decides he has to shape culture through television and streaming, et cetera, et cetera. He's only been the producer on about 6 of the most fabulous things that have come out in the last 10 years.
On the most acclaimed comedy, Veep, and then, of course, on the most acclaimed drama, Succession.
Well, some people think Succession is a comedy. We're going to get into it.
Well, you know, one person doesn't, Rona, and I'll tell you who that is. Ask the New Yorker who that person is. We don't have to get into it.
Well, that's none of that. I don't know that we want to touch the New Yorker.
I don't think we do.
We don't have enough time to get into the New Yorker piece.
No, we don't.
And why they assigned that piece to somebody who had a personal relationship with the subject, who I personally think it was a little bit of a vendetta.
See, to me,
that's
good journalism.
That's my, I don't know if it is good. I wonder if that is actual journalism.
Well, but should we ask?
Well, we may as well have him join us. He's been here for 20 minutes listening to us talk about him.
The inimitable, the iconic Frank Gritsch is here.
Frank, hello. I can't believe you found the time for us.
I can't either. I'll be honest.
I'm very honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
How are you, Frank? Are you getting excited for the holidays? Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I am looking forward to the holidays. I'm like a lot of other people, I think, exhausted and from being shut in for 2 years. No, not really, but I'm looking forward to a break and being with my family and ducking COVID, you know, the full holiday experience.
And has New York got a little bit of the twinkle back, would you say? Is there any holiday twinkle at the moment?
There's a lot, actually. I mean, the city, particularly having lived through the past couple of years, the city seems shockingly back to life, except for certain sections of it, like wherever there are a lot of office buildings, no one's working in office building. But I've been to the theater now a couple of times and go to restaurants. Traffic is just god-awful again during rush hour. But I think underneath it all, there's trepidation about the new variant, and no one here knows any more than anyone else. And even though everyone has their booster that I know, people are a little bit wary now about eating inside suddenly and perhaps going to the theater and movies. And
everyone's living in this liminal space between they've had enough of it. It's time to come out. People were starting to come out of their shells and adjusting to what that felt like. And now wondering whether it's time to shut down again, basically. If it's lurking.
It's lurking. I would say one thing, having been to LA a couple of times, two or three times over the past, since you could travel again over the past 5 months, LA is definitely behind New York. And how every time I've noticed that, it's always like 5 or 6 weeks behind New York in terms of how much people are out and around. And so it's been sort of interesting for us to go to New York and see family and friends and see, things that we're doing here, they're not doing yet. So whatever's happening in LA, you think it's further advanced here.
I just want everyone to know, I might not be in LA right now, but I will defend it to the death. And what you just said, Frank, I think is atrocious. Wow. And I think if you can bash LA in your next column in New York Magazine, I don't care, but not on my watch.
I like LA. I'm not but yeah,
it's the classic New York LA axis, and Frank was taking his chance to say that New York was ahead of Los Angeles.
Well, by the way, it is. It is in every way, actually.
No. Frank, I like California. Go on.
You've had an up and down month, Frank. We lost Sondheim. We also have had the incredible success of Succession over the last. The show is on its third season. It's very successful, but we're right in the middle of the, the finale, et cetera, et cetera. Don't spoil it, Frank. Don't spoil it for anybody who's a week late to it, but.
The butler did it.
Oh boy.
Sorry about that.
You've ruined lives just now.
On the subject of Steve Sondheim.
Yeah.
There's really nothing that hasn't been said well by many people, but I think for those of us who are close to him, and I first met him when I was in college.
I can't believe that story. Ago, yeah.
It's an incredible story. You wrote a piece about Follies in the Harvard paper, and Stephen Sondheim saw it and wanted to meet you.
Yeah, it was really crazy. And really, it was a life-changing thing for me. In the past 20 years or so, we've become close friends. He was 91, but he wasn't ill. And I had a hilarious conversation with him 5 days before he died. We were making plans to have dinner in January after the holidays. He was an enormous fan, as I was forever, of a British actress named Harriet Walter, who is in Succession. She plays Lady Caroline, Logan's ex-wife. And Harriet was coming here in January. She mainly lives in London. And we were going to have dinner with her because he was dying to meet her and vice versa. And so it was kind of a shock the morning after Thanksgiving to just get the call that he had died. And it happened, very suddenly. I mean, by all accounts, a rollicking Thanksgiving dinner with friends in Connecticut where he had a country house where he spent a lot of the pandemic. And so I guess that's the way to go, but it's been devastating to all of us in the room because besides being a big loss, of course you expect someone 91 to die, but still it was a shock because no one expected it like tomorrow.
People were so touched by his work. I mean, Brian, you had an incredible post, but it was so many people that felt that they had to say something personally about how moved they were to their on a sort of molecular level by his work.
It's amazing for two reasons. Well, first of all, I have a friend who's I'd say he's a titan in the music industry and has done some work through the years involving Steve Sondheim, but also done work with a lot of top artists in both the classical and modern and pop field.
That's not David Foster, is it?
No. And it's somebody in New York.
I really didn't want it to be David Foster.
Yeah, it's not David Foster.
No, you didn't.
We were having lunch about a month before Steve died, and we were just talking about Steve in some general way. And he said, you know, I don't think there's a person in any art form in American culture, not just music, who's more universally beloved than he is. And that was sort of borne out by the reaction to his death. What's fascinating to me is someone who's known him so long, followed him so long, he was greeted with scorn for much of his career. You know, when West Side Story opened on Broadway in 1957, when he was in his 20s, most people didn't even mention that he wrote the lyrics. When a funny thing happened, the way the Forum opened a few years later, where he wrote the music and lyrics. No, it got good reviews, but most people didn't even mention him. They regarded him as just a secondary. And then shows like Company and Follies that were now considered classics got crappy reviews in the Times at the time. And so it's really amazing. Sunday in the Park with George lost the Tony Award. Most of his shows lost the Tony Award. And yet the stuff is so great. It has a permanence, and even his flops, like A Merrily Roll Along, are done more often than, you know, My Fair Lady. It's just it revived more often. So
I think it's what took me from being like, I think one of the first Broadway albums I heard as a kid was probably like Les Mis or Phantom or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I remember the very first time I heard a Sondheim show was music from Company and then Sunday in the Park with George right after that, before I had seen the shows or anything. And I think this probably happens to many people. Something goes off inside you to where you feel seen and you feel that you're understanding yourself a little better and looking at things a different way. And it's extremely exciting to be introduced to his work and then to appreciate it.
I think it's a great point. I think he does speak to people. And what's interesting is no one wrote a larger variety of characters. I mean, he wrote everyone from Gypsy Rosalie to Georges Seurat to Commodore Perry, the admiral who opened up Japan, and Japanese characters to elite Scandinavians and little night music to a homicidal killer like Sweeney Todd, to the Elaine Stritch character in Company. What a the fairy tale characters in Into the Woods. What a range, you know, that he could inhabit those characters. He often said he did it like an actor. That he was, you know, inside them, internalize him, because he didn't have those experiences. You know, he's a conventional upper middle class New York City Jewish, you know, upbringing. He wasn't like spent a lot of time in Japan or around murderers that I know
about. What an imagination, though.
Yeah,
and what an understanding of humanity.
Capable of so much understanding. Yeah.
And empathy with all kinds of people, you know, including bad people. One thing that when Succession started, one complaint about it, I went through it a little bit on V2, is why should we care about these despicable, horrible, narcissistic assholes? And I think one reason that it works in Succession is because the writers and the actors somehow make the characters so real that you find some human elements in them, even if their behavior is despicable. And so Steve could, you know, burrow into a horrible mother like the mother in Gypsy or Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd,
You know, or you name it, and make it live.
When you look at speaking of horrible characters, we're going to read out letters in about 2 seconds. But when you look at Succession and you watch I think part of what, and this, I think, goes with what you were saying. Part of what you connect to is that you see that these characters, as awful as they can be, are all acting not, they're all acting from a place of insecurity at all times. They are all defending their whatever little piece of whatever they have, and they can all crumble at any moment. And you see them collapse and rebuild themselves over and over again within the space of an episode, but certainly within the space of a season. And I think, you know, we're not going to talk about the New Yorker profile, but I think it's why Jeremy Strong's performance is so affecting, that you go from thinking, what an absolute laugh buffoon this guy is, to being devastated by him in the space of, you know, and it happens with all of them. They all just play the game a little bit differently, but it's incredible when you can connect to that humanity, which is that they are acting from their weakest part, not this, and projecting their strongest part. I think anyone can relate to that, really. But
absolutely, you know, that's very well put. You know, and it's Brian Cox plays Logan, says, quoting Jesse Armstrong, who the writer who created the show, Logan does love his children at some level. How he expresses it, how he treats them is another story, but he does. And you do feel very much that Roman, and to some extent all the kids, love their dad, twisted as he may be and as those relationships may be, and they want to please him, even if they want to please him in the most awful ways or ill-fated ways, depending on how the story is going.
Much of the show is just about separation. It's about, you know, can they separate from him and can't they? And whatever that push and that pull of a child and a parent, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a fabulous show. And I know you're deeply involved and you were deeply involved with Veep. And it's just, I mean, you have brought us so much terrific, so many terrific things to consume, Frank.
No kidding.
In your lifetime. So we have to thank you for that.
Frank, I truly have to save face just for myself. Was Forum panned in previews or overseas or something?
Oh, no. What happened with Forum, and it's something.
It just for me?
It's actually a story that I told Steve Sondheim the first time I met him. When I was like 12 years old, a funny thing happened where the Forum was trying out on its way to Broadway in Washington, D.C., where I lived as a kid. And I saved up money from a paper route. I was already falling in love with the theater. And with my parents' permission, I couldn't transport myself. I was like in the seventh grade. I bought tickets by sending in a mail order. It opens in advance. It opens in D.C. for a 3-week run. It gets savage reviews. Not only that, but the critics say it's filthy. That's like burlesque. There's a brief debate in my family whether I would even be allowed to use this ticket. And I took, you know, a little girl in my seventh grade class, and they said, oh, whatever. We go to the last Saturday matinee before we moved to Broadway in New York. And I'm so excited because I got the tickets back in the mail and they're the fifth row center. And I, you know, paid $4.80. I still remember for them. It's a 1,700 seat house, the National Theater in D.C. We come in, my friend Nancy and I, we take our seats, and there is no one behind us in the entire theater. The reviews have been so bad in Washington. A week later, it goes to New York and becomes a complete smash hit. It got rave reviews in New York, even if Steve was slighted in those reviews. So some years pass, 20 years pass. I'm in college. I meet Steve at his request after I'd written about him, about Follies. And I tell him the story. And he says, oh, I remember that. The smallest house I've ever seen a show of mine play to in my life. There were 50 people in the house.
Oh.
And he said, that day, Hal Prince was the producer and Steve were visited by Jerome Robbins, who was not involved with Forum, but they had done both West Side Story and Gypsy with, to look at it. And he said he saw the matinee and he said they were going to, Hal Prince was going to close it in Washington, not even bring it to New York. And Robbins said, don't close it, bring it to New York, change the opening number, which they did. And it was a number Steve, he said,
let's have comedy tonight, right?
Comedy tonight. Although the opening number they had, which was called Love is in the Air and Assistant McCord, also wonderful. It's not like it changed the show that dramatically, but it was a very good number, which Robbins, without billing, choreographed, and opens to get these great reviews. And that's when I learned from that day till now, there's people in D.C. know almost nothing about anything, and certainly, and certainly know nothing about culture. I don't care how many Kennedy Center honors they have, you know, they gave it ultimately to Steve, but he was treated shabbily with his own stuff there. You know, it's like,
I love it.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, you have provided with that story. Every single one of the many gay people listening to the show are all on their fainting couches right now. No doubt about it.
Well, and a couple of the straight people.
And a couple of the straight people too. Of course. Of course. But we are all fainting.
And a couple of the pluses.
And a couple of the pluses.
I'll tell you one more story that will feel a very limited audience.
Well, the show's almost over, Frank. And
I don't mind. Keep going.
Keep going.
My last conversation with Steve.
This is like a Make-A-Wish Foundation for Brian this episode. It is. This is your holiday present. You're not getting anything else.
This is fine with me. I love it.
Last conversation with Steve. This was a sort of interest, like 10 people, but I think you may be one of them. He said, I ever tell you the story about Arthur Lawrence, and Forum. So Arthur Lawrence was the author of the book of West Side Story and of Gypsy, among other things, The Way We Were, was a mentor to Steve. They ultimately had various fallings out because Arthur was known to be the most savage, you know, critical, nasty people joke because I knew him. He's dead now. And so he says, well, Arthur came down to Washington and saw Forum. And he went up to Larry Gilbart, who wrote the book of Forum, and said, hey, I really liked it. Larry Gilbart said, thanks. Show 3 weeks later in New York, Arthur goes and sees it again, runs into Larry Gilbart and says to him, I saw Forum again. I really liked it. And Larry said, well, I know you told me that a few weeks ago in Washington. Arthur said, this time I mean it.
Savage. I love
anyway,
it.
We can leave that aside. That will not make the final cut of this, but I just...
Of course. Are you kidding?
That's fabulous.
That was part of my last conversation with Steve. That's how alive he was telling stories like that.
Then did he see the new West Side Story? Did he have a chance to see it?
He saw it months ago. He was a big fan of it. He was a big fan of The Assassins and The Company. They're both running in revivals in New York.
With Katrina Lenk, who's fabulous.
Yes, I have not. I saw this company in London. I haven't seen Katrina Lenk do it yet. It's a different actress over there. He also went to two plays the day before he died. He went to a matinee evening, two straight plays that were running at the Lyceum Theater, two experimental plays. Wow. He was completely out and around, you know. And
he was 91.
Incredible.
Yeah. What a life.
Yeah. All right, let's help these low lives who are nothing like Stephen Sondheim.
Let's talk about people that have real problems now, shall we?
Absolutely.
Okay. We're going to do three questions. We'll do them as quick. I know you have theater tickets tonight, so we're going to do them as quickly as possible. And if for some reason we run out of steam, we'll let you go.
For sure.
Okay. By the way, the theater tickets tonight, again, this isn't necessarily for the broadcast, are for James Lapine's new show.
Wow.
Who's Steve's partner on Sunday in the Park, co-author and director, and Into the Woods. So this is his show, which he's been in previews in a while.
What's the show?
It's called Flying Over Sunset. It is a new musical, and it is based, as I understand it, still an hour away from seeing it, speculatively on what might have happened, the fact that in Beverly Hills, in the 1950s or early 60s, Cary Grant, Aldous Huxley, and Claire Booth Luce all tripped on acid, which happened. That's nothing that's been known. I don't know to what extent, if at all, they knew each other, but as I understand it, they were all in L.A. at the same time and all experimented with LSD. And Lapine has written and directed a musical, and I'm sure it's like Sunday. I haven't seen it yet, but you can imagine that someone, the guy who wrote Sunday in the Park and Into the Woods, what he would do with raw material like that and where he might take it.
So and who's playing Cary Grant? Who do you get to play Cary Grant?
It's not somebody famous.
Cary Grant is one of those people who wasn't even Cary Grant.
Archibald Leach, wasn't that his name?
Except that he was. I mean, To watch Cary Grant move was it's one of the most incredible. There's nobody like Cary Grant.
It's a Broadway performer named Tony, I think it's pronounced Yazbek, who is a very accomplished singer dancer. He was Tulsa in one of the revivals of Gypsy. You know, he's been around. And I think it must draw on the fact that Cary Grant, of course, began as a vaudeville dancer and
He was an acrobat.
Yeah.
Which is why he could still do To Catch a Thief at 150 years old. Sure. I always love watching those movies and then looking up how old those fellas were when they did those Hitchcock movies. And they were, all 55. Yeah.
And he was like such a good physical comedian, too. Incredible. Makes sense that he was an acrobat.
Incredible. Okay. Dear Rana and Brian and wonderful guest. Frank, truly. How this works, people send the letters in. They have nowhere else to turn, obviously, if this is where they've turned.
We're not experts at all, but we're just wonderful people who give flawless advice.
We're just two people that are right most of the time. That's all we are.
Got it.
Okay, we're not doctors.
I'll try to screw it up.
You speak from the hat. You speak your truth, Frank. And look, they wrote in. You don't have to feel you have to handle them with kid gloves. They know what they're in for. If you want, you ask a question, you're going to get an answer on this show.
Got it.
That's it.
Dear Ron and Brian, a wonderful guest, should you choose to read this on the free feed. Here we are. Proud CHIP here from the beginning. Those are our VIPs in our Patreon show, Frank.
That's right.
Thanks for all the laughs you've provided me and my husband over the last few years. We're thrilled to hear about the arrival of baby Steve. Congrats to you, Rana and Jordan. Okay. I have a dinner party etiquette question I hope reaches your desk in time for the holidays. We moved to NYC from NYC to a nearby and predominantly white suburb earlier this summer. I'm going to think probably Pelham or something like that.
Okay.
As a lifelong New Yorker, I have to admit it's been lovely to have space I never had growing up in the city, and we've all come to enjoy our lives here and the people we've met through my 3-year-old preschool community. The neighbors in my hood, however, while seemingly welcoming, are at different family slash life stages, most of them being on the older side with grown adolescent children. We've been invited to a progressive holiday dinner. Each course of them, progressive as in we go from place to place, not
politically,
possibly right. also That's politically progressive. Sure. Possibly not, though. Each course of the meal is hosted at a different person's house, and I offer to make pernil, which is a Puerto Rican roast pork shoulder that I always make for my family and friends this time of year. Because my son is unvaccinated, however, I didn't want to host everybody at my house. Okay, I mean, here we go. He's 3. Another neighbor, a middle-aged white mom of grown children whom I've met once, maybe twice before, offered to host the main dinner in her house and solicited others to bring sides. This morning, the host called me to chat about what I was bringing to the party. She began the conversation. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am an absolute foodie. When you say you'd make a pernil, I Googled it immediately. They've spelled it phonetically. I Googled it immediately, and it looks so delicious. She went on to quiz me about whether I use a specific recipe, what ingredients I use, how I season the meat, where my family is from, whether I make it in the Puerto Rican or the Dominican tradition, etc. Then she says she is going to make one too. Oh my God. Dueling pernils.
Wow.
So we can have 2 pork shoulders at the same time. She didn't say the word competition, but it sure feels like one. Now we are going to be a bunch, 28, but she couldn't have asked me to make 2 or to buy an extra large pork shoulder or offer to make a honey glazed ham or whatever other meat dish it is white ladies in their 50s traditionally make. No offense, Rana. Well, I would never have a honey baked ham.
Well, I was going to say, ham isn't necessarily.
It's not that I don't eat ham, but I don't eat ham. I eat prosciutto. I don't eat ham. There's a difference.
Oh, I see. You're not kosher.
Yeah. No. Okay. I'm not kosher. I'm just discerning.
Sure.
I thought she was asking me how I prepared the dish because she wanted to rule out any allergens or food restrictions. Well, I know it's not the worst example of cultural appropriation. It is the first time I felt directly sort of attacked in that way. She even tried to enlighten me on how appropriate it was to make a pineal because she read that it was a dish typically eaten around the holidays. Yeah, that's why I offered to make it. I've already been on the fence about even attending because of Omicron and my unvaxxed son, but it would be impossible to back out now, wouldn't it? Do I go and make the best pork shoulder of my life and never accept another invitation? These are my neighbors. I don't want to make things too weird. FYI, there will also be a white elephant portion of the evening. Sounds like a nightmare. And I'm considering bringing something petty, like a cookbook of recipes from the 13 colonies or a copy of White Trash Cooking. A real book, apparently. Looking forward to any advice you have for this. Nayurikan, is that how you say that?
I say New Yurikan, but I don't know which.
New Yurikan transplant, navigating white suburbia for the first time. Thanks. Please don't use my real name.
What do you think, Frank? Does she fight fire with fire? What should she do here?
Is it cultural appropriation?
She should move.
That is move outable. That's a move outable offense.
Yeah. First of all, this neighbor sounds like she's insane. Second of all, the time it took for her to write this, the questioner to write this narrative, she could have made both pork shoulders during that time.
Oh, finally, Frank.
You have finally, no clue.
You don't know these people. They need to be heard. They need every word to be heard.
Finally, I would say that the letter writer should suddenly discover that she went on one of those sort of DNA, find out your heritage.
23andMe.
Discover that she was part Jewish and so she can't eat pork. End of story.
And just say, I'm not making the pork anymore.
No, and I can't eat your pork either.
Yeah. And it's actually really offensive to me that you're making it.
And by the way, I actually think, based on friends of mine and family of mine, you probably don't want it. If the three-year-old was going to go, I don't think so. I don't think the three-year-old should be exposed, quite frankly.
28 people is a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
A lot of people. Yeah. I don't care. And I have to say, I have two sons, both with children who are 5 and younger, but only one of the four children between the two of them is 5, and that child has been vaccinated.
Oh, wonderful.
Because he could, but the others can't be, and they're being hugely protective in various cities, including New York, of exposing kids who are not vaccinated to any situation like that. So I think she has a good out.
There's your out right there. That is true.
That's it. End of story.
I think you want it out in this situation. I don't think there's any winning here. You're going to go. You're not going to have a good time. You're going to feel uncomfortable. Yeah. You're going to spend the whole time comparing whatever they did to what you did. And you have the ability to say to this person, we thought about it and with the new variant, et cetera. And I already shared my recipe with you anyway. So I hope everybody enjoys it. Let me know how it goes.
That's true. Because the new variant is sort of new news. Like you can use that as a thing of like, this really, we've been thinking about this and we don't know that this is right. But yeah, that is some true far from heaven neighbor craziness. That someone would pick mm-hmm. up exactly what you're cooking. And by the way, you also know this is going to be an indoor event
because it's
in the Northeast. But yeah, that this person would do that. And then whether she consciously meant to or not, I think she did. See if she could one-up you? Gross.
That is gross. What this relationship will be. So if you think that's fun to have a crazy neighbor, that's fine. And you can engage with this woman. But you've only just moved there. It's a terrific time to set the boundary of,
I don't play that game.
We're happy to come to the potluck, but we're not ever going to be to have an individual relationship here. And it does not have to be said. You just have to bow out, I think. Mm-hmm. And, don't make your dulce de leche for the next party or if she asks you what you're making, tell her you're making thumbprint cookies or mayonnaise. Tell her you're making homemade mayonnaise.
No, tell her you're making some kind of exotic dish involving innards like tripe or whatever that no one wants to eat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
And with a novel recipe which calls for the addition of chocolate mint ice cream.
Oh, I'm gonna throw up everywhere.
Terrific.
Brian, speaking of vaccination, why don't we do that one now? You want to read that one?
Yeah. Okay. Dear Rana and Brian, and distinguished guest.
Frank Rich.
Longtime listener, first time writer, and I must thank you for keeping the Carriage House bright and gay even during the summer hiatus. I write to ask for your thoughts on how to talk to my mom about getting vaccinated. Background. Since the podcast has taught me that it's always relevant, I'm 25. My mom is in her mid-50s. She lives on Long Island where I was raised, and I live in the city. My mom is a liberal through and through. She despises Trump and has never expressed anti-vax views in the past. I have one brother, and both of us were vaccinated as kids, of course. But in the last few years, as she's become more interested in yoga and clean living, oh boy, she started listening to a radio show here in New York hosted by the alternative medicine guru, Gary Null. I don't know him.
Do you know who this person is, Frank?
I don't know him, but I know that he has an operation in my neighborhood in New York. He's one of these people who's been around for decades, sells these vitamin supplements, supplements that look whatever.
Sure. If you're unfamiliar, as I was when she first spoke of him, Null has been known to rally against vaccine mandates in schools and is a seller of a line of dietary supplements, as you were saying. He's written books about how a plant-based diet in tandem with these supplements can stave off aging, as well as more snake oil claims like, oh boy, treating AIDS and cancer. This is about the time in my research when my stomach really started to turn. ACT UP has outed him as someone who's actively harmful to the HIV and AIDS community, as he is an HIV denier, denying that HIV seems wonderful, denying that HIV causes AIDS. As a gay man, this is particularly offensive. Upon further digging, I learned that his academic credentials were attained at a college with no actual campus, and his thesis review process has been called into question numerous times over the years. My mom refuses to get vaccinated because Gary Null has told her that Big Pharma cooked up COVID in a lab in order to sell the world the vaccines we're now rallying around. Try as I might to explain to her otherwise, she believes that the vaccine will stay in her body forever and alter her DNA.
For the better.
Probably. I think it's only going up from here.
Maybe she won't need any supplements.
She, my stepfather, and my brother, 17, are the only members of my family that have not gotten vaccinated. Well, that's some big ones. Even my 80-year-old grandparents are confused by her refusal. It's gotten to the point where I feel uncomfortable being around my mom, not because I think she'll give me COVID, but because there's this enormous elephant in the room. The fact that she's being scammed by these pseudoscientific charlatan, by this pseudoscientific charlatan into alienating herself from society and putting the health of herself and others at risk. The worst part is that it's a total surprise. Never in my life would I think an intelligent, liberal-minded person such as my mom would fall prey to this kind of misinformation. It would be one thing if she were conservative and had always felt this way about vaccines, but this is someone who works in law, plays first violin in a chamber group, and preaches progressive values openly. We used to be so close as mother and son. She is the Rana to my Jordan. We have tickets to the New York Philharmonic in the spring that will go unused when the vaccine mandate takes effect in New York by that time, and she is barred from nearly all public spaces in the city. How do you convince an intelligent person she's being duped? All my appreciation and admiration to you both, Brandon. Do you have any run-ins with these sorts?
Not really. I mean, I hear about them anecdotally from people who do. There's something about this that doesn't add up. I mean, I do know of anti-vaxxers who are not Trump people, although it seems like if Gary Null went to a school that doesn't really have accreditation, it sounds like a campus, it could have been Trump University or a spinoff.
For sure. Yeah.
But there's something, this, given the rest of his description of her, progressive, obviously cultured, law, must read real news, not just, phony, misinformation. I think get her to a shrink. If a shrink will see her. maybe it would have to be a shrink in Alabama.
Right. To have a face-to-face interaction.
So there aren't any holdouts in your life, Frank. No one's of getting the vaccine. This seems to be a new trend, which is that there are these yoga and wellness people who, I mean, if you think about, the circle, And it's
the
sort
left
of,
going so far left
yes,
that it becomes
all
the, right.
the way around that these people right. are almost next to each other.
No, it's
this
like
seems
Bobby
to be a
Kennedy
thing.
Jr. meeting the Trumpiness. I get that, but I have to honestly say, I'm thinking, I know of a couple of LA people who are somewhat nutty, in one case in show business, who have resisted vaccination for crazy reasons, have nothing to do with Trump, but it may have a little bit to do with Gary Null type things, like extreme, crazy wellness, pseudo wellness.
Is it nonsense. Just narcissism, though? Is it this idea that your body is so sacred that you couldn't possibly put something in it? But yet it's okay to make every 5-year-old in the world get a measles vaccination or they can't go to school.
I think that's a good analysis. And I really think, you know, this woman needs help beyond getting the vaccine. I think there's someone's that detached from reality. And it's not like, you know, she's living in, Keokuk or whatever, and, you know, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. She's living in Manhattan, it seems like.
What do you think it is in people that, because this is sort of like the QAnon thing. What do they need? Why is it that they need to be the exception and the holdout and the, what is that?
I don't know. I think there's some emptiness in their lives that they're looking for some kind of quasi cult.
Yeah.
Belief, whether it be religion or about medicine or whatever. It doesn't even matter. Politics doesn't matter to fill the hole. You know, I'm not equating this woman to people who rioted January 6th, but if you read more and more pieces about people who did, sometimes they were quite sane people. They weren't QAnon people. They were people who seemed to pass as sensible, educated, newspaper-reading people, but something went terribly wrong and there was something missing in their lives, and somehow this gave them an identity. Because
people that are lost.
And I think people that feel like they're losing their grip or their power. I think there is a vulnerability.
Yeah, or they're standing.
They're like reclaiming something. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also, I do think it always just leads to, when you go like very left like that, and even I guess very right, it's some version of libertarianism. It all just becomes that thing. But it's also just like, well, then you can't take advantage of any of the other things in this country. So just shut up. Yeah.
A friend of mine who's a pediatrician who runs a clinic in Orange County, California.
Oh boy.
Said, I was a lot of problems with people, parents not vaccinating.
Right.
And creating all sorts of issues by treating their kids for anything, you know, for a cold or whatever. But this friend of mine said recently, it was about a month ago, two sets of parents separately had defected and got vaccinated. And why? They found out you had to be vaccinated to get into Disneyland.
Right.
And that was their incentive. They're in one fantasy land, and to get into another fantasy land,
amazing.
They needed a vaccination, so they got vaccinated. So,
right. Where's your philosophy then? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So my guess is
everyone has their price.
The Philharmonic or even seeing her child may not be enough of incentive, but he should find whatever the hell it is. You know,
sure.
Maybe it's going to play craps in Atlantic City. God knows what it is. But
you know what? That's a great piece of advice. Find her fantasy, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And
what's
say,
her
I
Disneyland?
Gotta stick us to this. You have to get vaccinated, though.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't go exactly. see it. And yeah. we're all going.
See Wicked, whatever the hell it is. Yeah.
We're going to go Tony and Tina's wedding. For her, it's Tony and Tina's.
We're going to go on the Carnival Cruise Line of your dreams.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to do this next question very quickly. Okay. And then, Frank, the most important thing is at the end of the three, we're going to ask you, we always do a giveaway. We just give it to whoever we feel needs something. Doesn't have to be who needs it the most. It's whoever we have a feeling
for. We give like a little gift to one of the people who wrote in.
And so, at the end, you're going to tell us who you pick.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Dear
it's
Ron
like Queen
and
for a day. It's like Queen
it's,
for a
it's
day.
It's exactly. We're going to give them a dishwasher. That's exactly yeah. right.
Everybody gets a whirlpool on this show.
That's right. That's right.
Dear Ronna and Brian, I'm sure I'm not the first mother. Okay. This is two quick letters. Somebody wrote in, then there was a follow-up.
Okay.
I'm sure I'm not the first mother of the bride who should be cavilling over her daughter's upcoming nuptials, but instead find myself in need of advice to thwart our daughter, Jordan, pardon me, as though same as my son, different spelling with a Y, our daughter Jordan's intended wedding plans. Firstly, we love our soon-to-be son-in-law who wisely sides with his soon-to-be bride. Secondly, Jordan's father and I are only too happy to host an elegant but in no way ostentatious day. We're excited to walk our beloved daughter down the aisle. Here's where I'm digging in my heels. Jordan asked for a small wedding, immediate family only. We said great and meant it. However, then she said she wanted to invite all her friends and extended family to a large party later that same day. No, in caps, friggin' way, in caps. This is not a bat mitzvah. You don't have an intimate ceremony with a few and then have a huge party that night. I will not invite guests to a party and not include them in the wedding. I find this in terrible taste, insulting to guests, and so wrong for many reasons. I haven't been able to reason with our Jordan, with a Y. It's been futile explaining why this is not the proper way to commemorate the day. Help me, Rana. Help me, Rana. Regardless of not having the joy and angst of having a daughter, I think you will agree with me. Daughters, you love them. They tear your heart out, and we come back for more. Please, I implore your sage advice, which is a dig, Frank. That's how they call me old. Yours truly with an aching heart, Melinda Pressler. Now, we didn't answer that email, and in the meantime, she already wrote in again. Dear Rana and Brian and guest extraordinaire. So the first letter, she's telling her daughter she could have a small party, but not a big one, and her daughter's wrong. I wrote to you regarding our daughter, she thinks her daughter's wrong. I wrote to you regarding our daughter, Jordan, and her intended wedding plans. I was exasperated and needed to vent my frustrations. Also, hoping for some validation. I've reread my letter, and in doing so, I had an epiphany. Oops, too late. I let our daughter know in no uncertain terms that she and her fiancé were free to have whatever type of wedding they wanted, and were free to pay for it too. I put my foot down.
Oh my
both.
Gosh.
She went from paying for it to not paying for it.
To just dipping out.
I put my foot down with both my daughter and husband that we would be there for their wedding day, but her aunts and uncles and cousins and none of our friends, not that she cared, would be included in this fiasco, all caps. Lo and behold, my obdurate stance took hold. My husband sided with me and not our daughter, which has been their pattern in the past. Alas, I'm culpable of enabling Jordan to get her way when turning to her father. This is a mistake I regret, and there's not a do-over. However, what advice do you have for couples whose parenting styles don't align? Perhaps you have sage advice, the dig again, for couples learning to parent on the same page. I'm wishing Jordan Page and fiance, Page must be the daughter's middle name, and fiance all the love in the world. Mother of the bride, Melinda Pressler. P.S. I find myself becoming my mother, oi, and wishing Jordan has a daughter just like her. My God. That's loaded. The only question she's asking, she didn't ask for our opinion on the rest of it. The only question she's asking is, how do you handle it when your husband doesn't agree with you?
And when your kids are too old to give them up.
When you're always right and your husband doesn't agree. That's the only question she's really asking. But I'm not so sure I agree on anything she said.
I don't agree with her at all. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just give her a number? Why didn't you say you could do whatever you want?
There's a budget.
We'll give you $50,000 or whatever it is, $12,000, $2,000, whatever the wedding was going to cost. It's your day.
Yeah. Or again, use COVID as a good excuse. You want to throw a super spreader event? Be my guest.
Sure.
You pay for it.
Thank you very much.
And the lawsuits that will ensue. The question of what the question about her marriage and how you deal with two different, work it out. You could do, 500 hours of podcasts and you're not going to be able to help unless you bring them both in and have marital counseling some sort of official sort? That's such an open-ended question.
Well, something tells me that when the writer doesn't get it the way she wants, it's intolerable for everybody.
There's no conversation. Yeah.
Right.
My advice would be take a look at yourself.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like you're open to compromise.
It doesn't.
You want...
Put it mildly, yeah.
Well, that's what a marriage is.
Yeah, of course it
and
is.
And you don't... And look, anyone who thinks you compromise on everything is crazy. I mean, everyone has their line. So you get your way, you get your way, you get your way, you get your way. And then there's a moment where you don't. And that is where the deals are made, in those moments where the other person digs in. Because
listen to Steve Sondheim, The Little Things You Do Together.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. There you go.
But truly, Melinda, dear, I know you thought you were writing in and we were going to tell you you were fabulous and write about everything, but I think you need to take a little look at yourself. And yes, it does sound like maybe you created a monster with your daughter, but it sounds like you sort of deserve it a little bit also, dare I say. Yeah. The men are silent.
Now I've got because I've got The Little Things You Do Together running on a loop in my head now. I can't stop. It's blaring in my head right now, just so you know. All right, Frank, we're going to give a gift to someone who we think deserves it the most this week. Are we going to give it to the mother who wrote in, who we just discussed just now? Or are we going to give it to the person who lives in the neighborhood where the pork shoulder competition? Or are we going to give it to the daughter who's or the son whose mother is anti-vax?
I vote for the son because the other two people are just clamoring to be with them, whether they want to be with whether they want those, you know, the big dinner or the big wedding or not. Whereas that poor guy with his mother seems to be going to the Philharmonic alone, you know, and sort of he needs a lift, I'd say.
And unfortunately, I think that is a harbinger of what's coming for the rest of his the mother isn't going to get less crazy. That's the bad news.
Yeah.
People don't really snap out of this stuff. This is usually a decline when they start thinking these crazy thoughts. The algorithm feeds them more of the same ideas and they become harder to reach. So I think
we're going to send him something lovely. Frank, we cannot thank you enough. This was phenomenal. I loved every story you told and every piece of advice was spot on. So thank you a million.
And thank you, Frank, for not making me write to the Make-A-Wish people who then had to coordinate the meet with Brian.
It all
happened here on the podcast.
It did. It all worked out.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. And, I'll probably be a questioner the next.
I highly doubt it.
I'm counting on you
Frank.
To solve whatever Soros I come up with.
We will have a wonderful night at the theater.
Yes.
And next time we're in New York, we'll have Elaine set something up.
And remember, everyone, the butler did it. For everyone watching Succession, the butler did it. I'll reiterate it here.
All right.
Thank
Frank.
You, Frank.
Thank you, guys. It's really fun. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, Ronna, Frank had to bounce.
He absolutely did.
His theater appointment? What do
we
want to send?
That's the life of Frank.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? One opening to the next.
I mean, truly.
Real
New
Yorker.
He gets all the best tickets. He is living. We should have asked him about that. He's living
the perfect life.
Fantasy New York life.
He is living the fantasy life.
Yeah.
He is.
He really is.
He is.
So what shall we send to the son of the anti-vax mom, do you think?
Oh, gosh. Something nice. What do you think, Ronna? What would make someone feel really
well? We never sent. Last episode, we talked about sending the eye mask, the sleeping pillow.
Let's do that. I was thinking that, too. The slip.
Yeah, exactly, which was off of your list. Because I think this is a lot of sleepless nights, thinking about the ways in which it's really about loss. How you've lost your mother and how you have to deal with that a little bit.
Yeah.
I hate to say it.
There's no reason your skin or your hair should have to suffer through it with you.
Well, that's always true. All right, dear. Now, are you going to read the cliffhanger?
Of course, Ronna. Okay.
And you know, this is our 100th episode.
No kidding.
I mean, I just had to reiterate that because
come on.
It's something.
It's outrageous.
It's something.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Here we go. Dear Rhonda, Brian, and fabulous guest, he had theater tickets. So good luck, Charlie.
There you go.
I'm a gay man in my early 30s and have been single for the last 6 years. In 2016, I moved from Ohio to Providence, Rhode Island for grad school and have since moved twice more for work.
From the frying pan to the fire.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I currently live and work at a boarding school in Boston, Massachusetts. Each time I've moved, I've hoped that being in a new city would help me find more dating opportunities. However, being in grad school and teaching at boarding schools are all-consuming lifestyles and have not left much time to work on my romantic life. Though I've been working on myself and love who I am, I've always wanted a partner by my side.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's, by the way, that's goals.
That's the whole battle.
That's the whole battle.
Yeah.
I've always wanted a partner by my side and consider myself a romantic. It gets lonely living by oneself. A few months ago, I decided to intentionally prioritize my dating life. I joined a few dating apps like Hinge, since Grindr got me nowhere. Yeah, Grindr's not a dating site. And since then have been on a few dates that have not progressed into something more, meaningful. Amidst an unending stream of weddings, I've leaned on my single queer friends to feel less alone in my single life. However, two of my closest friends have just gotten into relationships seemingly overnight, one of whom just moved to Boston a few weeks ago. Oh. I'm happy for them and obviously wish them the best. Mm-hmm. And yet I find myself struggling and feeling okay when they share good news about their relationships. Snapchats that say, night in with the boyfriend, with pictures of the two pairs of feet resting. Well, they're gross.
With I don't want to see anybody's feet.
I don't
feet.
Either, ever.
Yeah.
Of two pairs of feet resting on a table or texts that share their excitement about finding love when they weren't even looking. They're texting you that?
That's all fake.
Of course it is.
What do you care? That's fake. That's not going
to
last.
None of that's real. Yeah. Feel like little daggers to my heart. All I can hear in these messages is
you
how
need
happy
new
and
friends,
lucky.
Not a new boyfriend.
They sound awful. Yeah. By the way, anyone you see someone having the time of their lives on social media, God knows what darkness they just leapt out of for one second while the pictures.
And I want everyone to remember that when they're looking at your Italian pictures.
That's right. Just know I'm dying inside.
Yeah.
All I can hear in these messages is how happy and lucky they are and how unlucky, undesirable, and lonely I am. I've not expressed these thoughts or feelings to them, however. I want to be supportive and do not want to burden them. I guess my question is, what do I do? How can I balance being happy for them without letting my own insecurities get in the way? Am I being overly egotistical in always looking through the lens of my own struggles? Is there something I could do to make myself more attractive to others and finally find love? Thank you for the advice and laughs throughout the years. Happy almost 2-year anniversary. I've learned a lot about myself from the two of you and look forward to your wisdom and wit each week. Kiss, kiss. Joshua, feel free to use my name. Wonderful.
Well, join us on Patreon for the answer to Joshua's query.
Correct-o.
No. Nothing
honestly,
Rhonda,
saying query is absolute gay bashing, Rhonda.
Everything intended.
It is the height of it. It is
everything
the height
intended,
of it.
Is what I wanted to say.
What's your advice going to be for him to just eat a fruit cocktail?
Only if it's a dull fruit cup with extra liquid
syrup. Yeah.
That's what they're going to serve you in La Première on Air France is a fruit cup.
Oh, I don't doubt it. And be mean as hell to me, probably.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. I can't wait to hear all about it.
Me too. We'll see.
All right. Join us on Patreon. Remember, coffee is only here till it's here. It's gone December 31st. That is askronacoffee.com. People are going crazy for this coffee.
Losing their minds.
I have to say, it is absolutely delicious. We're going to have to bring it back. I might bring it back for Valentine's Day. No promises.
I think it's
no
a wonderful
promises.
Idea. I think we should.
See. I said we'll see.
Okay, Rhonda, jeez.
What does that mean? Vienna in winter, in Valentine's Day.
Well,
Vienna,
it's still winter.
Valentine's in Vienna.
That's right.
We'll figure it out. In any event, we've got that. We've got the Rhonica blend. Of course, the Negrana is still for sale at Negrana.com and Connor's gorgeous boxes. Five stars only. All of these are ways that you can support the podcast. People talk about how much they love the show. That's how we keep us on the airwaves and how we get a little love from the algorithm. And do not forget December 29 to watch Naomi Ekperigin's Netflix special.
The stand-ups. Go see it.
All right.
Not even go. Sit down and watch it.
Yeah, go sit. Well, you're watching on your phone or stream it or whatever. Happy holidays, everyone. We adore you. We love you. And we can't wait to hear all about Brian's trip.
That's right. Pictures to prove it. Pictures of me being so happy.
Yes. Kiss, kiss.
Kiss and kiss.
Hi, I'm Dr. Lori Watson and the co-host of Foreplay.
I'm your co-host, George Fowler, former firefighter, your couple's therapist who loves to talk about sex.
Woo, let's discuss everything about the best sexual techniques to building your emotional intimacy, which is really necessary for great sex.
We bring sound, concrete tools to reframe your relationship problems and learn how to fall in love again and feel desire.
Listen to Foreplay Radio on the iHeart app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.